Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we've got a season two preview. I just sprinted through season one again because, you know, fun show to watch, and I thought I'd refresh my memory. So many good scenes in that first season. So many memorable things that happened.
I remember a lot, but I did not join you on the rewatch.
Well, yeah, I.
So what were the
literally
standouts?
Binged it.
What were the standouts?
The thing with Mike where he goes into the Kettleman's house and finds their money.
Oh, the caper. Yeah, sure.
The caper. That was a standout. I don't know. There's a lot of good stuff with Mike in there, you know, where he does the pill thing. Saul. I don't know. Saul and Chuck at the end is a little more emotional, but it's still a standout.
What was the, because so we got some feedback on this that we might get to later, but what was the experience of watching season one with the full knowledge with the problem with Jimmy and Chuck, the essential flaw in their relationship, with the knowledge of that? Like, did it change how you felt about certain earlier scenes?
Not a ton, because I kind of picked up on, like, watching it the first time, I picked up on some of the stuff that was going on between Chuck and Saul.
But the blatant betrayal at the end, I don't think any of us saw, did we?
No. No, I don't think so.
We could go back and play the tape on the original podcast, but I'm pretty sure that blindsided us.
Yeah, but you could totally see it, like, the cell phone stuff, and it happens, like, kind of all in one episode, right? Yeah. It's not like they really build to it.
I just wonder, like, if some of the asides and, like, him helping out on the case, like, how did it play him deciding to help out on the homeless, not the homeless, the old folks being taken advantage by the house?
It felt, like, pretty natural.
Did that make it feel more like this was affection for his brother, or just was he couldn't refuse the call of the legal industry?
It felt almost like he was watching over Jimmy at the same time that Jimmy was kind of asking for help.
Huh.
Like, it felt very much like Jimmy's almost doing his brother a favor, too, because Chuck at that point is,
sure,
like, just really, you know, twitchy, and he's got his mental thing going on with the EM stuff, this case kind of pulls him out of that, to a degree.
How can Chuck hold in his mind the two concepts that Jimmy is a bad person, but also the one who is very selflessly doing all this, you know, Charlie work for him, getting, you know, like just
right.
going along.
Yeah.
I understand that he sees himself as sick and needing help, but if Jimmy is the drifter con man that he thinks he is at his core, mm-hmm. why the fuck would he be doing that to no gain? It's not like his brother's reputation has ever helped him. I mean, I guess that's what the thing. Does Chuck think that because Jimmy doesn't know about his basic betrayal in his partnership, that he blames this all on the pretty boy, Hamlin?
Hamlin?
Does he think because it's like this weird Schrodinger situation, because if Jimmy doesn't know the underlying real ethics of the situation, he's still helping his brother out of a desire to get ahead? Like, he thinks Jimmy thinks, well, my brother's tried his whole life and maybe he'll try again, so I'm gonna keep doing this thing. I feel like Chuck is just a really hard animal to figure out.
He is, and there's partially because there's a lot of conflict there.
Got the underlying problem of him just being kind of with this medical
right.
condition.
Yeah, and he sees Jimmy doing some what he thinks is good stuff, but it's always tinged with this impression that he has of Jimmy. Like, when he goes into elder law, he's like, oh, I don't know about this. Jimmy might be conning these people. This billboard stunt, that was...
Jimmy does seem to play... I mean, he does seem to do that a bit. Like, Matt locking it up.
Right, right.
He is a bit of a... Even when he's at his best, a bit of a shyster.
Yeah, but I almost... I don't know. I don't view that as dishonest. That's just, like, an advantage that he presses. When he gets into that Matlock suit,
like his when he's burning through, I remember all those justice montages of him just grinding out with the prosecutors
right.
these little wins for his clients. I mean, I think that's good lawyering.
Uh-huh.
But I think his brother is, I don't know, it's weird. It's because it's almost
the billboard thing kind of calls him into question.
Sure,
again. He sees that Jimmy was trying to hide it from him. finds out anyway, and now he's got to question his loyalty, question where his head is at.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out Chuck, if he has got, like, this weird, almost, like, what the public's perception of what a lawyer should be, like this Perry Mason statesman, you know, strong closing arguments, and or whether he, you know, he doesn't like this kind of blue-collar lawyering that Jimmy's, which is all hustle.
It's all hustle, making deals. He's somewhere between Jimmy and Hamlin. Hamlin's in it just for the money. Jimmy's hustling and actually, like, being a little dishonest.
But is Hamlin in it just for the money? Or because that's the other thing is, like, now I feel like I have to go into season two
right,
not knowing exactly, because Hamlin might be the good guy.
You have to readjust your expectations after you find out that Chuck was the one keeping Jimmy out of the firm.
Especially since you realize that all along Jimmy's been saying, my brother made this firm. If my brother pulled out of this firm, but that also means Chuck's got a big gun to Hamlin's head.
Right. Chuck and Hamlin might be one and the same, because everything I get from Chuck says he is not doing this for the money in really any way. He is in it to help people. And the money comes from that, but ultimately his goal is to help people. And that's the thing he constantly stresses to Jimmy.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't... Well, he wants to help people, and therefore he wants to keep Jimmy out because he thinks Jimmy is a dishonest sleazebag.
Well, see, I think... With good reason. Chuck has got... It's not even so much helping. It's like he's got this fascination with the process of law and justice. Like, almost as a machine. Like, it's...
I mean, there's some of that. Absolutely, he wants to help people. I mean, I think it's...
What's your unequivocal evidence from that? Does he ever go into speech about how...
all the time.
Really?
Okay. All the time in season one.
I don't remember that. I remember him being fascinated with the ins and outs and legalities and, like, almost like from the way...
That too,
a German engineer admires a well-crafted machine, but whether that machine is in a tank that's killing people or in a race car that's, you know, running a fair race, it doesn't... His admiration for the system is the same.
Not true of Chuck.
Okay.
Because Jimmy occasionally is like, let's make some money. And Chuck's like, and help people, right, Jimmy? Because that's what we're in it for.
Now, do you think that... Is there possible that there's some hypocrisy on Chuck's part that... Because, I got this really strong impression about him being kind of more of a pure legal nerd, a legal wonk. Do you think he's just saying that because that's what you say when you're a lawyer? Or do you think what's the evidence of him really helping people?
I think the reason he's keeping Jimmy out is because he wants people to not be conned and to help people. Because, like, calling him a chimp with a machine gun, like, Jimmy with a law degree is a chimp with a machine gun. That, to me, says it all.
Okay. Like, so he's afraid of people get hurt more so than his law profession will be besmirched. Because that's kind of the way I walked away with my understanding of it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that that's part of it. But certainly he wants to help people. But Jimmy / Saul, and I think we're going to see a lot more Saul in season two. I can't imagine, you know, his comments about, I'm never going to make the mistake of letting my heart get in the way of my head, basically, or get in the way of a $1.6 million payday. That leads to the Saul path.
It does, but I was actually surprised by how few steps he took down the Saul path in season one.
Yeah, me too.
Like, it's almost like the mission statement at the end of season one was, I'm committing to the Jimmy path, but that's something that could easily be subverted because, you know...
Sure, Kim's still in the mix. Like, what does she feel?
And I thought, you know, we watched a few interviews with Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, and I can't remember. I think it was Vince that said, the hell of this is, as we write more Jimmy, we start really liking the guy.
You do,
And, you know, the central tragedy of this is you're taking this kind of... good guy. Or was Jimmy a good guy when he's grifting people? That's the other thing, because it seems like his targets for grift, it's not like he was going after old ladies. He's going after blowhards in bars, stuff like...
I don't think slipping Jimmy is a good guy. I think Jimmy, like, after the fact, is a better guy, but there's still always a little bit of slipping in him.
Well, that's the thing. Is like they talk about slipping Jimmy, which, you know, that seems like a bad thing. You're taking a small business owner who's just trying to get by, and you're deliberately generating something that's going to take money out of his pockets. Not because the owner was necessarily negligent, but you exploited some weakness in the legal system. Whereas all the examples of actual graft I saw or grift, rather.
Yeah, yeah.
Not graft. All the grafting he did was essentially just taking orchids and putting them on the pear trees. All the grift I saw him do is taking advantage of kind of people that we were supposed to not feel sympathetic to.
Yeah.
I guess the worst one in retrospect was him telling the woman that he was, you know, Kevin Costner.
Right.
And her
right.
being outraged. But that's like pretty soft outrage because, come on, it's fucking Jimmy. He doesn't look anything like Kevin Costner.
Sure. But you get some beer goggles and maybe.
Sure. I don't, maybe that's uncomfortable.
Also, what the fuck is Kevin Costner doing in Cicero in the shitty bar?
Sure. Like, yeah.
And really, this is his manager's place, this right. basement apartment
right.
bullshit.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah, I feel like there is a little bit of slip in Jimmy, even when we see him at the beginning of the series, right, where he is an actual lawyer and he's doing his public defender thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's a little more honest because he kind of has to be. Chuck's got him on the leash there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's still a lot of slipping in him. And once Chuck is out of the equation, it's going to come out full force. We're going to see Saul.
So what are the big open questions at the end of season one? So from my memory, they are, what is going to be the nature of Chuck and Jimmy's relationship going forward? Is Chuck going to be a more malevolent force going forward?
Well, they've set that up really interestingly because, I don't know if you remember this, but at the very end of the season, Jimmy gets the offer from the law firm that they've hired to do additional work on this class action suit. So now there are two, not competing law firms, but cooperating law firms, one with Chuck, one with Jimmy. How are they going
to
butt heads?
Because Chuck's returned to legal
to HHM, yeah.
Right, as a...
He's back.
Yeah, he's back.
I mean, he's definitely on this class action suit. So they've got to butt heads, right?
Well, but why would... I mean, that would... It seems like if you got two clients are serving... Or two law firms, it'd be like, you know, a five-alarm fire and five fire departments come in and start arguing over the firefighting. Maybe that happens.
Yeah.
But it seems like it'd be a breach
it
of a lot
with
of
police,
different...
right? This is my jurisdiction. This is my case. Get the fuck out.
It happens in the all of the what I see on television.
Right.
I don't know in practice when the FBI rolls in.
TV's what we're talking about.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I guess that's true. You're right. You're right. Yeah,
if
of
you
course they'll butt heads.
If you want to inject drama, you
got to... Yeah. They don't got their clients' interests in best art. They're going to just stake out the personal claim and piss all of their territory and...
Right.
You talked me into it.
What about him going to San Jose? Is that what's going to happen?
Because
this other law firm is in San Jose.
No. I don't think that can happen because this thing has to stay.
Is it
going to
be like Hank going to Texas? It happens for an episode and then you're back.
The turtle blows up and he comes back, yeah. I mean, yeah, because you can't take this thing out of Albuquerque.
Not for long, no.
No, I mean, for a couple episodes, maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, you'll have a misery montage of him just hating life, and then he goes back to the land of the green and the red chili.
Right. Because you need... I feel like season two needs Nacho, and it needs Mike.
So that's the other thing. So, Nacho, obviously, big hanging thread. Big threat set up to
feels
be...
Feels like he got screwed by Jimmy, which he did.
Kinda.
Yeah, Jimmy made the phone call, which got him arrested, but then Jimmy gets him out. Like,
yeah.
How bad did he really screw you?
Yeah, he did screw it. Yeah.
Nacho's now kind of...
What's Nacho going to think?
Tangentially mixed up with Mike as well, because he went on this pill escapade excursion with Nacho buying the pills from that, I don't know, khaki wearing doofus.
He's a pharmacist, wasn't he? A pharmacist tech?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
He was not equipped to deal with...
He didn't have all the tools necessary.
Right. So Nacho seems like a big player.
I feel like Kim's another thing.
Kim, yeah,
like
their
what
relationship.
Is the nature of their relationship going forward?
I have heard Kim called Jimmy's girlfriend in like official stuff.
Whoa.
Right?
Going forward or past?
I don't know. Calling her his girlfriend going into past
would be a gross misstatement.
It was a very strange, non-contextual thing.
That's a lie along the lines of junior high, I've got a girlfriend, but she lives in Michigan, and
but I, feel
no,
like
I don't
you,
have any pictures
yeah,
of her.
Right.
Like that. No, you're, she's not your fucking
she's
girlfriend.
She's from another school.
She's
yeah.
a photo you got in your wallet, man. Come on.
But if you go back far enough, I think maybe that could have been the case. Like, mailroom Jimmy
There
and
might have been
Kim.
Some... Oh, yeah, I guess it's true. I was thinking that maybe there was like a shameful lack of... Discretion, maybe. Okay. Like, I don't.
A few, man, too boat drinks.
I can see,
or a few too many boat drinks.
I can see why Kim would be charmed by a guy like Jimmy, and obviously see why a guy like Jimmy would be charmed by a gal like Kim.
Sure.
But I don't. Yeah, I don't know. I'd call him girlfriend, though, from what we know as a current affair. So that,
yeah,
seems
it's
like
current.
It's forward looking information.
Or way back looking, like, but either way in the past, or
then you describe her as his ex girlfriend or former girlfriend,
right,
or
right,
old flame. You wouldn't say girlfriend because, again, that's a lie.
So it could be a season two thing. I don't
what
know.
Do you think about? Because at the end of their, they're kind of at odds. Jimmy feels betrayed by her. Yes.
Well, he offered her the partner position at his new firm, which wasn't really a thing at the time. He kind of jumped the gun on that.
Yeah, okay, sure.
He showed her this big office and said, hey, this could be yours. So I don't think they're like really on the outs, but I could see why Jimmy would feel, a little betrayed.
Okay.
A little shunned, a little rejected.
Okay. So you don't think, okay, because I guess I felt like there was a bigger rift than that at the end. My what I had in my head.
Well, was until the Chuck thing, because the Chuck thing got everybody kind of up in the air, right? Like, Kim came to him, said, take the deal. He basically told her off, said, fuck you, I'm not taking this deal. Mm-hmm. And he did feel really betrayed then. Mm-hmm. But he found out about Chuck, and they had this conversation where she was like, I just wanted to...
Right, because she...
Didn't want you hating your brother.
Because that Jimmy found out that came from Hamlin.
Right.
It turns out was in his best interest, but it didn't fit any of Jimmy's existing facts.
So I think they're back on speaking terms, back on good terms there.
Okay.
With everybody except Chuck.
Right. And people might be like, man, you guys are really belaboring a season one point, but we actually had a lot of feedback from people wanting to know kind of like a basic, the gist of where things stand in season one. So
I'm looking forward to seeing who Hamlin is.
Yeah, that's what
honestly,
I'm saying. Like, I don't know that Hamlin's a bad guy. He seems
right. You assume he is. I assume he is.
After the fact, though, the stuff that he—if you take it as he was genuinely looking out for Jimmy when he was saying things to Kim and whatnot—and he does seem like a guy who, you know, I guess I recontextualize him as a guy who has a gun to his head because Chuck can ruin him and the firm at any point. So when he asks stuff like, "No, we can't hire my brother. No, absolutely not,"
right?
Then he has to be the heavy.
Yeah.
I mean, I see him as almost like a slave at this point. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have any of his own free will.
Yeah.
So,
no,
I don't know. I would like
to
see, although I do think that personality-wise, they're going, you know, because Jimmy's blue-collar, he's white-collar, Jimmy's, you know, three-piece off-the-rack JCPenney, and Hamlin's, you know.
Although I notice more and more throughout the season, he's wearing those nice suits. Like, he does it as a joke for the billboard thing, but then he wears that suit.
Well, of course you're going to wear it. You're going to throw it, oh, this gambit didn't work, I'm throwing
but
it away.
But when does he become the suit?
I don't know, because honestly, Saul Goodman is not defined by his impeccable dress.
Absolutely not.
He's defined by his cheesy pinky rings and his Bluetooth earpieces
and his
wild
Cadillac and suits,
and his inflatable Statue of Liberty and his crazy Arsenio Hall-esque three-piece suits.
So he's got to transition away from the Hamlin into the Saul at some point.
He's better dressed than Jimmy. Saul's better dressed than Jimmy, but he's not as tasteful as Hamlin,
right?
If you want to call Hamlin, I mean, because Hamlin was wearing those big fucking giant knit ties.
Yeah, he looks sharp. I mean, in typical high-powered business fashion.
It's just
funny
because I remember as a teenager growing up, like, I look back at the 60s and the 70s and how crazy those extremes of fashion were.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're living in a modern age, and this is just the way we're going to dress for probably the next 100 years. Like, this fashion is never going to go out of style. Smash cut to 2016, I'm looking back like, what the fuck? You know, like, the 90s shit is now kind of turning into vintage, and it's coming back, and I'm like, oh, no.
We don't want 90s
No,
again.
We don't want 90s. It was like, you know.
Definitely not. But the classic suit, you know, the pinstripe suit, it's hard to say that that's ever going to go out of style.
It's so weird, though, because, like, I'm watching OJ right now, and, like, that wasn't that long ago, and this shit looks dated as fuck. And kind of the same way that I looked at David Simon's... Show Me a Hero. All those hairstyles and stuff was so fucking dated, and that wasn't that long ago.
Right.
I'm confident my son is going to look think that I'm wearing clown clothes and all the pictures that he sees of me as a teenager and early 20-something.
Oh, I already think that of myself. Like, I think of some of the shit I wore walking around the Greenwood Mall. I'm like,
I recently found
me.
A huge batch of old photos.
Oh, no.
And you and I are in a lot of them.
Jesus.
That might be a lunch one day. That might be all a lunch Jim and Aaron one
I
day.
Had... I wore some fucking silk shirts.
Sure.
I wore some fucking maroon or purple suits. Yep. Like,
I got some convention pictures of us
horrible.
And especially your dad, and I got some LAN party pictures and
all right.
Us at our best.
Great. We'll have to bust those out. I think what I want to see from season two is a little more gas on the Better Call Saul front. On the Jimmy turning into Saul.
So on a scale from...
I don't want him to be Saul at the end of the season, I think.
That's what I'm saying. From a scale from Jimmy to Saul, where are you wanting to see the evolutionary
I feel like he's path, at a three or a four right now. I want him at like a 6 or a 7.
Okay, so you want him a 3/4 Saul?
Yeah, and then maybe season 3 you put him at full Saul and you get him up to some Saul-ass shit with maybe some of the characters we've seen before.
Okay.
Because I think what I want from this series is I do want to see the future of Saul, too.
All right.
Like, beyond Breaking Bad.
So, I want to get the feedback real quick, but is there anything... There wasn't a lot of... I mean, there's a couple of preview scenes that have gone up. One of Jimmy floating in a pool.
Yeah. Which, talking to Kim, looking at a
so that,
cigar
this,
smoking...
This thing with him in the pool, that implies a level of prosperity that was surprising. Do you think that's where we're going to find him at the end of season...
Yeah, I think he's pretty prosperous.
How much?
He's got a new job. He's got that $20,000.
Did he accept it?
Yeah.
He did accept the new
job. At the end,
okay.
Yeah. Hamlin gives, after he finds out about Chuck and
just
says, I'm taking the deal.
All right.
So he's got some money. He's got
a
nice job. He might actually be in San Jose, yeah, in that pool.
There's also the music video, like a 30-second stinger that's like in a bar. Like
Yo it seems Soy like
a, yeah,
Saul
Yo Soy Saul,
like
where there's like a narco corrido ballad about him in the background, and he's just sipping.
Talking
like,
about his cojones.
He looks like he's trying to stay incognito. He's got like an old leather jacket and a black hat that he's wearing pulled down low, and he's just sipping tequila at a bar.
And he's got his absolute necessary accessory, which is his phone.
Yeah.
His shitty flip phone.
Now... I don't feel like that's in-universe. I feel like that's just as much as the music video that kind of like thematic. It doesn't really say anything about what he's doing.
I think you're right.
And then there's another short clip where it looks like Jimmy and Kim are leaving some establishment, possibly the place where he's been floating around in a pool, after they've just played a prank of some sort, maybe.
Yeah.
Or they just told off a business establishment, but they're kind of like drunkenly stumbling and giggling, fleeing the premises.
Right. You think Jimmy's going to corrupt Kim? Slipping Jimmy's going to come back and Kim's going
to
be...
If he corrupts her, it'd be to the extent of like a Simpsons-esque prank of like flushing a cherry bomb down a toilet or doing a Chicago sun pool where you just shit in the pool. It's not going to be Grand Theft Auto or anything like that.
Grand Grift Auto.
Grand Grift Auto.
Grift Theft Auto. Get someone to give him their car.
Yeah. Yeah.
In exchange for
a box
full of Rolexes.
He trades them a Lamborghini kit car. It's
right.
Just a fiberglass body. It's screwed to an old Volkswagen Jetta. Straight up for like a Mercedes. That's the car
for
grift.
his white Cadillac. How about that?
Ooh,
Grand Grift's his Cadillac.
Grand Grift Auto. Yeah, it's got this Lamborghini. You know, it's like I wonder if you could do that.
I mean, as long as they don't take a test drive,
imagine you play like a really drunk Texas oil man. It's got this really. Well, no, I guess you'd be targeting the arrogant Texas oil man that's got the big Cadillac, and you pull up in a Lamborghini, and you're like, you know, it's like, I've always won. Maybe play European.
Okay.
Like, I've always wanted a nice Cadillac, and you do it in some European accent that I can't pull off. And you say, hey, just straight up trade. You're 60,000 caddy for my $200,000 dream car.
Speaking of scenes,
I don't know how much a Lamborghini costs nowadays.
Scenes that stood out. That was one of them, when he goes to this guy who wants to secede from the union.
Yeah.
And he tries to pay him, like, he thinks he's got this windfall of $1 million, $500,000 in cash, and he brings it out, and it's his face on this New Republic on these New Republic dollars or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That's one of the standout scenes.
Right.
I love
on.
That. Another standout scene is when he explains, like, the mystery of the Chicago sunroof is unraveled in this old person home.
Sure.
This nursing home while he's playing bingo. That's just a classic scene.
Before we get to the feedback, just want to plug a couple things we're working on here at Bald Move. Of course, we've got Better Call Saul coming. Walking Dead comes back the night before, so we'll have our modified coverage of Walking Dead. We're not doing instant casts in favor of an accelerated podcast as a full coverage out on Monday, and we're still doing the live watches. We got that in March. We're excited. House of Cards comes back, but we're really excited for Daredevil. We're going to be doing that mm-hmm. first run, just like we did House of Cards last year, where we cover three episodes a week. It's going to be intense. It's going to be grueling. Hopefully it won't suck. Excited about that. And then around the time that wraps up, or maybe even concurrently, Game of Thrones is going to come back with the mysterious season 6 that nobody has any fucking clue what it's going to be about or where it's going.
Right.
Because Martin decided to not get out another book. So that's going to be fun. It's going to be the first time where the book readers and the show watchers are going to be holding hands and hand in hand and singing.
And the Bear and the Maiden Fair.
Bear and the Maiden Fair. As we're all sweet summer children together.
Uh-huh.
I encourage you to support us by joining the club at club.baldmove.com, where you can do the live watches of Walking Dead with us, where we just essentially make fun of the show and the local commercials. It's a video offering. We've also got our lunches with Jim and Aaron and On the Rocks with Jim and Aaron, which is essentially a variety show where we drink and we talk about whatever and we interact with the audience. We've got Quit Your Pitchin', a new zany theoretical pitch show for television. We got a couple other fun features that I can't talk about because we haven't released them yet. And first Bald Run First Movies, where we go and see the movie the night before it comes out and have a full review on the day of its release so you can be informed about whether you want to see the movie or not. We got a short spoiler-free review that we give away for free, and then the club members only get the deep dive. We're doing Deadpool tomorrow, in yeah. fact. So that'll be something.
Sure.
So yeah, we got all that coming up, and hopefully you can support us there at club.baldmove.com or amazon.baldmove.com is a great way if you're shopping online, shopping to Amazon. You get all the same great prices and shipping and product selection, and you're also helping out Bald Move. Why wouldn't you? Okay, well, let's get into feedback because there's a nice little segue. If you want to send feedback going forward, there's two places you can do it. You go to forums.baldmove.com or you can discuss it with us and our fellow fans. And you can also send in longer takes to bettercastsaul, all one word, at baldmove.com. And all those contact information is in the show notes of every post. So if you're looking at it on the website or on your podcast player, they should be accessible. Our buddy Tom G., says, I'm looking forward to finding out what a Hoboken squat cobbler is. I've read it is the Chicago sunroof for season 2.
Okay.
What is the... I had never even heard of the Hoboken squat cobbler before I read his comment. You did a little bit of digging to see how this ties in. Do
yeah,
you have any information for us?
So, I did an incognito Google search. There's no fucking way I'm going to search Hoboken squat cobbler without it. Nothing came up as far as, like, real-world Hoboken squat cobbler.
Hmm.
So it seems like it's an in-universe thing that they've made up.
Okay, sure.
And it's going to be, spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear this, skip, like, 5 seconds. It's going to be him defending a client using that phrase in episode 2.
You can't put my client away for what's a simple Hoboken squat cobbler.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Do you think over the course of the season they'll reveal what a Hoboken squat cobbler is?
It seems like that. I mean, I've got some expectations for season 2.
Right.
One of my big expectations is I fully expect an opening black and white sequence.
I hope so.
That shows what life is like as the Cinnabon manager. And I feel like that is going to be as a season by season structure the same way that like season 2 of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Like every season opens up and it's going to tell us a little bit more about what Saul is up to now.
Yeah.
Followed by, you know, once they wrap up the fall of Jimmy to Saul, they're going to be a final season that's entirely in black and white that shows Saul's ultimate death, you know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I'm sure.
It's going to be very avant-garde. So I'm just going to say it. I was disappointed with the Chicago sunroof.
Okay.
I hear a guy like Jimmy say, I've a Chicago sunroof, and I do not think it involves a man in Chicago shitting through a sunroof. That is so literal.
All right.
I don't know what I was expecting. I was expecting something with testicles and spectacles and pressed up against glass, but mm-hmm. just literally squat. Like, I can't imagine. Like, Jimmy's like, he's like, yeah, Chicago sunroof, that guy. Whoa, Jimmy, what'd you do? I squatted through his sunroof and shit in his car. Why didn't you just say you shit in the sunroof? Well, you know, I got to make it sound like it's a Chicago. That I thought that was a little lame.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, I got a Big Mac yesterday.
The only thing slightly interesting about it is it was classified as a sex crime, which made me go to genitalia route.
Right.
But
the super interesting thing was the way it was revealed to us, like what it actually was and the extenuating circumstances.
But my enthusiasm for unpacking what a Hoboken squat cobbler could be is literally...
A squat cobbler seems pretty straightforward.
Well, I mean, so...
squat cobbler? Come on.
Is it a cobbler in the sense of like...
You squeeze out a cobbler.
Well, you're going to the food. I was going with the guy banging shoes together with the help of elves, perhaps.
A squat cobbler?
No, cobbler is literally a person who repairs shoes.
Yeah, but so he squats and he repairs shoes? Like,
no, he's short.
So does he take a shit in someone's shoes? So
what I'm saying is like, okay, a Hoboken squat cobbler sounds like a guy Hoboken that just shits in the street.
So you think it's a profession?
No, I'm saying that would be an interesting way to take it, and I don't think they will. I think it's literally going to be a man in Hoboken that just sits that shits on someone's front porch.
Okay.
That's the Hoboken squat cobbler.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think it's going to involve
that
shitting.
That seems disappointing to me.
Okay. I don't know. I wasn't disappointed in the Chicago sunroof, so.
Now, maybe they'll make it, like, they literally will be shitting in a shoe. That would be, I'd like that. They could shit in someone's shoe. That's a squat cobbler.
In Hamlin's shoes?
In Hamlin's shoes.
That'd be great.
Has to be in Hoboken, though. If it's not, then what are we doing here?
I don't know that the Chicago sunroof happened in Chicago.
Well, it's a suburb of Chicago, right?
Cicero? I think it's just invented in that city, and it can take place anywhere.
But the guy was a Chicago big shot, though, right? So I think the crime happened in Chicago.
Well, he was Cicero connected, is what he says. I assume you can live in Chicago and be Cicero connected.
Well, Al Capone certainly made a career
doing
that.
So, I don't know.
We'll see.
I doubt he's going to go to Hoboken.
Okay.
That's quite the journey.
I'm pretty confident of that myself.
Okay.
I want to see what the Nebraskan Cinnabon's going to be.
Right.
The Nebraskan iced. The Omaha glazed Cinnabon.
Yep.
It'll be oddly foreboding and the foreshadowing. Chris from Germany said... On the 17th of December, the Better Call Saul Breaking Bad editor and host of the show's Insider podcast, who we know as Kelly Dixon,
yeah,
tweeted some photos of the recording for the podcast. She wrote week 4, but I'm not quite sure if this refers to episode 4 or just the fourth week of the work on the season. In one post after some pictures, she apologized to Jennifer Hutchinson, who is a writer of the show, for not posting a photo where you can see her, and wrote that this is because she sat right next to their quote-unquote secret guest.
I have some theories on this.
Garth Gal from California said that also a few weeks back, Villigan disclosed to the press that there was a guest star from Breaking Bad who hadn't been seen since season 1. My money is on Crazy 8 or Emilio, so I assume that is who Kelly would be referring to. I were surprised that we didn't see Emilio in season 1 because we had dinner with the gentleman who plays him, Max Arciniega.
Mm-hmm.
And I got the impression, this could be, and I don't want to get the man in trouble, but I thought there was several coy references to him being in discussions to appear on Better Call Saul.
I think so.
When he didn't appear on season 1, I figured that I thought those discussions either fell through or they shelved it as a story. I mean, maybe it's a story idea that came back for season 2. But
I get the impression that this season they were writing toward what they thought would be their end goal, which is Better Call Saul, like Saul being at the end of season 1. and they realized this is way too soon, too much too fast.
Yeah.
And they pulled back. That might have been the case. Like, maybe they were talking to him like, we're going to show all this stuff up until now, and we want you to come back. And
yeah,
they just got there too fast and decided to pull it in.
Now, who else could it be from season one? It could have been...
That we haven't seen since?
Yeah. Shit. It could have been... who was the friend... Who was the cousin that was the actual meth manufacturer that was Jesse's partner?
Yeah, I know who you're talking about. Gets arrested in the first episode or second episode?
Yeah, he's another guy who and ends up... You
the
know,
ride-along.
He ends up also... I mean, he's another person from season one we haven't seen since.
It's true.
I'm trying to think anybody like Bassing and Badgerskin, but no, we've seen all those guys. Combo even made it through to season two.
Right.
I'm really like, that's kind of like the only person.
Yeah.
Unless it's been like, what about, was it the janitor who was the who they caught with a roach? Like, I mean, is that a special guest worthy? I will say this about Max Cinega. The man doesn't seem like he's aged a day.
Right,
season one,
mm-hmm.
like he's got that kind of face that you know, and he was in a Dr. Pepper commercial last year, so he looks exactly like he. Unlike Bob Odenkirk, who
right.
every time I saw it cut from, because everybody talks about how bad his makeup is and how he still looks old. I guess I'm a sucker because I think he looks fairly plausibly young, Jimmy.
Okay.
But then every time they smash cut to him just chilling in his regular clothes, I'm like, holy shit! he chose the wrong grail! That's the only explanation. Max, no, he looks just like he stepped off the set from season one Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I can see him.
You don't need to make
back.
Him up or nothing.
Like, I wonder...
Raymond Cruz
like,
aged.
Does he work for Nacho? Like, is he gonna... What context would he be in? He's got to be tied to the drugs, obviously.
We kind of spend some time unpacking all this, like who owned what territory, but it does seem like, yes, he was a supplier, like a low-level supplier slash dealer for...
Tuco.
Tuco, yeah.
Seems like it, so we could see him in that context. I wonder if we'll see Tuco. We've got to see Tuco come back, yeah.
I know
we're kind of dealing with Nacho now, and he's the main focus. But
I feel like we don't ever have to see Tuco again.
They're business partners, right? I feel like it would be weird not to ever see Tuco again.
I mean, we can, but I imagine it gets harder and harder to bring Raymond Cruz back. And also,
right.
they've established him. They've established Nacho. Like, Nacho can run it now.
Sure, yeah. But, like, he's going to have meetings with Saul. Is he always going to do that in Saul's office? Is he ever going to go to Nacho's headquarters?
Do you think Nacho... So, like, I guess it seems like the underbosses of the boss have their own kind of layers too,
right?
You know, like they have a place where they hide out.
Sure, he had one. Yeah.
So I bet that they, you know, because yeah, he's got his little dog training pit, his little hacienda he lounges in. So I guess they could meet at a. Nah, I mean, there's not. It's not a binary system. It's not Jimmy's water closet or Tuco's little concrete block fortress.
Right.
There's a couple of different ways they could do that.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine we'll probably see him at least once more, Tuco.
I mean, I'm not opposed to it. I feel like that I don't think they used his appearance wisely in season one, but it's not that I'm burnt out in seeing Tuco or Raymond Cruz. I just think that they just didn't really know how to jump in with this story, and they were kind of nervous about not having any ties to Breaking Bad, so they shoehorned him in.
Right, right.
And maybe less would be more in that, but you know. I forgot. I'm running this joint.
Right. The other guy who's looking kind of old though is Mike.
But Mike,
fuck me, Jonathan Banks is looking old.
Mike started as a piece of beef jerky.
Right.
Now maybe a dog got a hold of him, chewed on him a bit. It's not like that's the other thing. Like, I don't think they bother making him up. Like, I saw him on set and they smash cut to him sitting in the chair. He just looks like Jonathan Banks.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of Jonathan Banks lately. Like, you know, he played heavily into Community. Season 4 or season 5. He was really funny playing essentially the character he always plays. Luke said, watching season 1 on Netflix, man, are Jimmy and Chuck scenes so hard to watch when you know it was Jimmy who screwed over, or Chuck who screwed over Jimmy? What a stab in the back, the way Chuck's just lets Jimmy hate Hamlin instead of manning up and telling Jimmy the truth. That's what I was getting at with you. You didn't seem like you had any kind of discomfort or any kind of trouble to contextualizing that. But that's kind of how I think I would be. Just how Weasley, how much, it's not just that he screwed over his brother, but the Weasley way he lets Hamlin take all that
it's
on
cowardly.
His shoulders.
It's cowardly. If you don't want Jimmy around, but at the same time, he's trying to rehabilitate Jimmy. So if he says, fuck you, Jimmy, I think you're still slipping Jimmy, how's he going to rehabilitate him at the same time? So like,
he's both cowardly and kind of a bully in retrospect, it seems to me.
Right.
Which I don't know if they'll be able to bring that character around or what.
Yeah.
So Garth has another opinion. He says, I know nothing of what comes ahead in the show, but I think we all know that Jimmy isn't completely transformed by the end of season one. Granted.
Right.
So what's really hard to think about is that this is just the first betrayal or stumble that he has on his way. Hard times are just beginning for old Jimmy. And even after he turned into Saul, he's going to be dealing with Heisenberg and going into hiding to look forward to. I can almost imagine the ending of the series showing Bob Odenkirk incredibly happy and looking forward to the future, and having him walk out of a bank after getting his loan for his business, only to have Gould and Villigan cut it with something ominous like Walt walking out of his doctor's office, which is right next to the bank, after his cancer prognosis.
Huh.
Do you think that this series is going to end with Saul, basically Breaking Bad era Saul? Or do you think we'll ever flash over that, you know, have like a Breaking Bad montage, and then now he's in Omaha, and because I feel like we need to see his end story in Omaha for it to feel like closure.
I really want to see that. Yeah. I want to see future Jimmy, future Saul.
I can also see Gould and Villigan saying, fuck your desires. We're going to leave that kind of essentially a mystery. And that's kind of going to be...
I mean, that opening scene in Nebraska might have been the end of Saul's journey. Like, just... It's not even bittersweet. It's just sour. It's just fucking sour. He's watching his old tapes thinking, God damn it, I had it all.
Yep. And now
I got mixed up with that guy, and now I'm a fucking Cinnabon manager.
And I'm not like the brilliant, you know, the bright flame that burnt out fast. Now I'm just smoldering.
Right. And that might be it for him for the rest of his life.
At the end of the series, a black and white segment of him sitting in, you know, you just kind of see the back of his head as he's watching these commercials, and it pans off to the side, and you hear a gunshot go off and just blood all over the wall.
I could see it. I could totally see it.
That would be fucking dark, man. Yeah. That would be fucking dark. And again, like, the more you like Jimmy and think of him as this kind of happy-go-lucky guy who's really had a lot of bad breaks, the worse it's going to feel when he gets transformed into Saul.
Right. And, like, how bad of a guy do you think Saul is? Is Saul a bad guy, or is he just doing
Look,
shit
man,
work for
Saul
shit?
Saul advocated murdering fairly innocent people as a way to make things go away. He advocated a murder of Badger. Yeah. He advocated a murder for Aaron Paul, Jesus.
Jesse?
What? Jesse? God, I could not summon Jesse out of my memory bank. What the hell?
That happens.
Yeah. No, Saul is not.
Right. He's a bad guy.
He's amoral at the very least.
Uh-huh. And you get the impression that is not the first time he's suggested those things.
Probably
so,
not. Although also you wonder how much of that is him being bravado. Like, is he really old hat, or is he really a guy who has made his bones getting drunk drivers out of jail? And this is he like licking his chops at his first super criminal he can work with, but he's kind of over his head the same way that Walt is.
We know he's tangentially connected to Gus. I can't imagine
only in the sense that he hires Mike to be.
But I can't imagine
a guy who spies on people's wives and husbands. But
right,
he doesn't know Gus. He doesn't know what Gus looks like. He doesn't know Gus's name.
But now he's firmly and directly connected to Nacho.
Uh-huh.
I can't believe that it wouldn't come back and him have to do some nasty stuff.
All right.
And getting used to that.
Chris agrees with me. He says, I also hope that we get a glimpse into future Saul again. I would even love to get a season 3 ending like you described, and then get a season 4 with future Saul after either during Walt's timeline in New Hampshire or after this. Maybe there's a mind-changing event in Nebraska which takes Saul back to Albuquerque for one last adventure or season to give him a happy end.
Sure.
That would be pretty cool.
Happy end or devastatingly?
Well, was Walton happy? Because it's that kind of thing. Like, I'm going back. Maybe he has to save Kim. Maybe he has to save Chuck. Maybe he has to save Hamlin. I mean, there will be neo-Nazis machine guns involved.
Okay.
But some kind of her, whatever would be the appropriate Saul-sized heroic sacrifice. Maybe he just goes to jail. Like, they're going to jail his brother instead of him because they're convinced that he goes and takes the charge. And then that would be a happy ending. Jimmy in prison, kind of living off his reputation as the lawyer, the right-hand man of Heisenberg. So he's, like, accorded a measure of respect beyond... It reminds me of the old Batman animated series episode of the guy who everyone thought killed Batman. He's just some low-level dude that he goes to jail and he's like, yeah, he's the closest that ever came to kill the Bat, and everybody really respects him.
And then he does some Slippin' Jimmy stuff in prison. he starts to make a name.
Yeah, he's the warden of the prison by the end of the series.
Okay, yeah. Right. But also still a prisoner.
Yeah, sure.
Sure.
Yeah. The real warden is the secretary, essentially. Luke agrees. He says, at some point they've got to jump post Breaking Bad, I think. Why else tease us with Saul working at Cinnabon in Nebraska? I'd be highly disappointed if at some point it doesn't cut to the future. That's my default position, but on the other hand, I can see them constructing something to where you know everything you need to know about Saul, and the Nebraska scene is kind of just like an epilogue.
It
shows us how to fully let us appreciate the depression and the isolation and loneliness and futility of his life.
And I feel like I'm in such good hands with Gould and Gillian.
Yeah.
That I don't have a do or die scenario for this show.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need
I put that shit back on the shelf in season one.
Right.
Because they confounded my expectations and also delighted me.
Yeah.
Even with it, I felt like they started with a hole because I was not overly impressed with the first two episodes.
Yeah. So I don't have a they better get to this or not. I'm just in it for their story that they want to tell.
Yeah. I'm same way. So that's a preview for season two. Hopefully got you caught up and fired up because I know we are. It starts this Monday, of course.
Yeah. I'm super excited.
We'll have the podcast out the following Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
And we'll see you then. Send feedback to BetterCastSaul@BaldMove.com and on our forums, forums.baldmove.com.